Okay, we just finished filming episode 24 of Festool Shop Talk. You always hear me say, introducing these, this is a must listen. Well, guess what? This is, because I interviewed somebody that I have been following on Instagram for 5 years, and I was blown away when I first started to see his work. This is Russell Kieselbach from at Kieselbach Workshop on Instagram. And wait till you hear all about his business and his woodworking adventure. Stay tuned, baby. It's going to be a good one. How you doing, Russell?
I'm good. Yourself?
Fantastic. Oh, man, look at that background. Oh, sorry. Okay. Hey, everybody. Oh, yeah, that's right. We're doing this today. Hey, everybody. Welcome to Shop Talk number 24. We're going to do at least 20 to 25 this year. So you're the first one of the new year, Russell. We have Russell, and let me see if I say this,
Kieselbach.
Okay. I got to remember that. My pronunciations are horrible. And he is from, I found him years ago on Kieselbach Workshop on Instagram. So everybody who's listening right now, and then everybody who's going to see this on YouTube, go follow Russell immediately. Okay. Okay, because I have followed. I think I've been following you for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah, probably.
And I love it when your stuff comes through my feed. I watch everything. Now I'm going to tell you something really quick, everybody. He's a phenomenal craftsman, but his selection for music on his reels is awesome. I know we have the same musical taste. So I was I wanted to mention it to that you a few years ago, but I always forget. I mean, I'm just like, he's got good taste in music, man. For sure. For sure.
Thanks, man.
Okay. So what I always like to start out with, Russell, is I kind of know you. I've met you a few years ago. I think we were at Hatfield Hardware.
Yep.
And, This is tough because people have asked me, hey, Sedge, introduce yourself. And I go, my name's Brian Sedgley. I don't know how to introduce myself still to this day, but I'm going to have you introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself.
All right. My name's Russell Kieselbach. I do custom woodworking. It's a heavy focus on furniture. I do some built-in work. I used to do the install side of it, but I've completely moved away from that because I realized I'm not an installer, I'm a woodworker. Two different fields.
Yeah.
And I really enjoy the creative side of the woodworking. I feel, too, like if I'm not in the shop making something that's creative, like my own designs, then everything else in my life starts creative. Like all of a sudden I'm making fancy dinners or, you know, like things have to, like that creativity has to come out somewhere. So.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Hey, how long have you been doing it?
Since I was a little kid. I was banging on nails in the garage when I was like 4 years old. And then it just kept progressing. I got my first table saw when I was about 13, which probably wasn't great. I almost lost my thumb. I've got a bunch of scars to prove it. I've always been doing it. I've just something I've always loved. And I would say I got more serious about it probably in my 20s. Early 20s is when I was like, okay, it's not just building a coffee table, but actually let's try to make something that's higher end and more into fine woodworking than just cutting up two I-4s and banging stuff together.
Does it run in the family, this woodworking gene?
It does, and the creativeness just in general. Cool. You know, like everyone in my family has got some kind of artistic skill or talent to them, and that's definitely something that has been passed down.
That's funny. People who meet me go, oh, yeah. My parents are now passed, but when people would meet me and then meet my parents, they'd go, okay, I get it.
Oh, yeah.
My dad was a salesman, but he was also an antique tool dealer and in his retirement business. And my mom was an RN, but she was also a painter. So I understand that creativity gene, and then my grandfather and great-grandfather were master carpenters. I'm kind of like you, where I've been banging things together since I was 7, 8 years old.
And my sister has pictures that she sent me recently. She was going through some of the old Sedgley archives and sent me pictures. I mean, using hand planes when I was seven. So,
oh, that's fun.
But the thing is, let me ask you this. When somebody asks you a question, you just, for me, this is how it works. I go, I think everybody's a woodworker. You know, right. and they understand this, right? Yeah. But for you, it just seems so natural. Hey, another question. Do you have formal training at all, or?
No formal training. I've never taken an in-person class, not even like at Woodcraft or anything. It's always just been self-taught. And that was before the days of YouTube. And I mean, when that first started happening, I remember being very excited and watching all the stuff I could get my hands on. I remember there's the Tommy McDonald was building a high boy. Do you remember that? Maybe it's high boy. I think it's the secretary desk, but I watched those religiously because it was the first time you could really get like something other than a New Yankee Workshop. You know, I mean, that was just like what I watched and what I learned. And it was all books. I mean, I would get every book I could at every library, and then I read like every episode of Fine Wood or every issue of Fine Woodworking magazine cover to cover. Just any way I could get my information, I did.
Yeah, I have a similar journey. And then I was blessed by being part of a guild down in South Florida, and we brought in some of the big names. And oh, by the way, that was way before. Oh, I don't want to say it. That was before the internet. justification, not justification. It was, I'm at a loss of words sometimes, but it was just like, okay, it registered in my head, I am doing it right. We brought in like Garrett Hack once for a weekend for the guild. And I was just like, okay, yeah, I am doing it right. Or Kelly Mela or somebody like that. And I was just like, okay, it is that confirmation. That's the word I want to get, that confirmation. Okay, I'm doing it right. But to see the little tips and tricks that they were doing, that to me in person is unbelievable. Okay, so you're self-taught.
Yeah, now
I'm thinking back.
I would say that a lot of the work I do is probably very different than what the traditional methods were because I'm self-taught, you know, like if I'm like, well, oh, this is how I would do it, even though that might not be the right way or the always have been done this way.
Yeah.
It's kind of a different view on it or a different take on how to do it. So now when I see people like, oh, this is how you're supposed to, you know, bend a piece of wood, I'm like, oh, that's totally different than what I did. So now I've got like these two things coming together. Like it's basically a bunch of trials and error, and then a bunch of old school knowledge coming together and creating like the best way.
No, I see that. I mean, and your designs and some of the period furniture you're doing, I'm blown away. I'm going to get right to it. The one that I loved because I really appreciate it was because I never heard, it's out there, but for you doing this, I was blown away. The Ruhlman sideboard you did.
Yeah.
And just to call out a meal like that and talk about that. And did you do, I was trying to watch a little bit to get ready for this. And I was like, is that a direct copy of the Ruhlman sideboard or did you throw any twists in there?
Yeah, no, it's pretty much my own. Like I just took his stuff as an inspiration.
It's
like, let's see what Ruhlman was doing. Like, you know, he used to have like a little white and wood stripes across the top of something. It almost looked like little squares. And those were normally ivory when he did it, which of course I'm not going to use now. Right. But I incorporated that design element to the top and I used maple for it. You know, he was so big on the torpedo legs. So that's just something I had to do on there. And I really always liked that idea of something that kind of curved out from the wall and just transitioned to a flat.
Yeah.
And that's why I did that shape. It wasn't like that I don't even think I saw anything like that before I went ahead and did it.
Yeah, and just, I'm just so appreciative. The torpedo legs were awesome. Those were maple and what?
And walnut.
And
the way I did it is solid wood. A lot of guys will veneer them. So they'll actually kind of like get the shape out of the substrate and then veneer it. Whereas I took a solid piece and just kind of cut it, glued a piece in, cut it, glued a piece in. And that way I got good grain match all the way around too. I mean, it really looks like one piece of wood pulled out of it.
The veneer on a sideboard. Oh my God, is that gorgeous.
Oh, thank you.
Call it out for everybody.
Yeah, so that's air-dried walnut.
Yeah.
And it's all shots on. I rarely buy veneer just because it's so thin. Like, the commercially grade available stuff is, like, you know, working with paper. So I did all shots on that, and I did all, like, book match. So, you know, I'd take a piece of 8/4 and just cut as many slices as I could off and just, like, fold them out so that it continued the whole way.
Okay, I'm blown away, man. I'm just, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That you resaw your own veneer. Then you have control. Who did I know that did? He book matched his drawer inside his secondary wood and his backs and fronts. And he always did everything out of the same log. Oh, I know what it was. Kelly Mela. He did all his. He's the one who taught me about grain.
Yeah.
And he had two pictures of a wall cabinet that he showed one night on the presentation. He goes, these are identical in proportion. They're identical. Everything is, every measurement's identical. And then we were there with all our significant others, our spouses, and all of a sudden he goes, everybody who's looking at these, everybody's drawn to the one on the right. And we all were. And he goes, why is that? And I go, because you matched the grain on all of that. And my wife goes, oh my God, now. And from then on, she's always going, look at the grain on that. Look how it's all matched.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and
once that light bulb goes off with people, they just, like, they get it finally. It becomes something important to look for.
Yeah, I have it's just funny you said that because I was looking at the nightstands you did. And those, okay, I love the curves. They seemed challenging, right? What can you tell me about them?
Yeah, those were tough. Getting the veneer to take that bend around that, like I said, it's all shots on here, so it's a little thicker too. I mean, I was wetting the wood on one side and letting it swell so the other side would kind of take more of a curve. The whole thing was, so the case, I started out with a solid piece or a long piece of plywood, and I put curve bends, so 2 points in it,
right,
and then twisted it up, so I created that, like, new shape. And that was the whole shape of the case, just from that. And then, you know, I used internal braces for the drawers to actually hold that U shape together and create the structure of it. And then the whole thing was veneered on top of that. It was tough. That, I didn't think it was going to be that bad, but it turned out to be way more challenging. And I couldn't use bending plywood because then the sides wouldn't have been nice and straight and firm. They would have been kind of wobbly and weird.
Yeah.
So to get that, like, nice straight and then to get that little bottom curve, I had to use straight with the curve bends. So it was a tricky build for sure. It was probably one of the harder things I've done in a while.
Yeah, and you incorporated Purple Heart with that?
Yeah. Yeah, so I've been doing a set of furniture for our bedroom. And, you know, it probably won't be done for another 15 years or so, but I started out with a small chest with a bunch of drawers, and that was about 6 or 7 years ago. It's like about 5 feet tall, and it holds a jewelry box that I made for my wife when we were dating. It was also Purple Heart and Maple, so it's all kind of based off of this. Wow. And then I did a headboard with the Purple Heart and Maple, and now the sideboards or the bedside tables are the same way. So eventually it'll be a dresser and a chest of drawers and a mirror and all that. It's all kind of like an Art Deco theme with the Purple Heart.
And it's your design, which is wicked cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's all mine.
I love that. I love that. Hey, I'm going to call it out, but that waterfall veneer on those nightstands is off the hook. Wow. I'm blown away, you know?
Even the fronts on those, I don't know if you noticed, but those are, I did the veneer on those too. Like, I saw the veneer on those, and they're all book matched across. But the grain on the drawers goes up and down versus side to side.
Oh, yeah.
So I had to make drawers with a substrate of poplar and then put the veneer on top, because if you made the drawers with the grain running side to side, they jam up in the winter and then fall out in the summer.
Yeah, for sure. I tried to describe that vertical. We call it waterfall in the marine business, and that's what I've always called it, because I always ask my buddy Jimmy, what do you mean by waterfall on a veneer? He goes, it looks like it's waterfalling down. I did a base in my basement, a base cabinet, and nobody knows except my nephew. When he comes over, he sees all my work, and he's the only one who calls out the veneer. And he goes, oh my God, UB, that is unreal, that waterfall. And you know what? It doesn't matter to me or anybody else who sees that. I know I did it, right?
Exactly. You know, so. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, you're the one that has to look at it all the time, so you might as well enjoy it.
Well, what I would do is if I delivered a pizza when I was building for a living, I would take that little bit of detail and I would incorporate it because, you know, I was building, I never saw it again, but I would point it out to the client just so they could brag about it. Yep. And I got Mikey, my business partner, got an email once. He goes, the Silvers, that's all they talk about is that waterfall veneer. And I go, why? He goes, they want us to build more stuff. So it led into more for us. So I was pretty pumped about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Hey, boy, I'm skipping all over. I don't care. I hope everybody listening is understanding. This is fun for me. just getting to know you, Russell, because I've been a big fan. Okay. So let me ask you, who was your biggest influence maybe in the furniture or in life?
Man.
Toughy, huh?
You know, I don't know if I could just say there's one influence because it changes so often. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, I my taste kind of bounced around a lot of different stuff. So for a while, it still is a lot of the Art Deco stuff. And Ruhlman is one of the biggest ones for that. But, you know, then I'll go and I'll rabbit hole down something else and get really into another designer or another woodworker. And I'll learn a whole new style. But one cool thing about that is now that I can, like, kind of start combining those different styles or those techniques into a different piece. So I don't want to say I have, like, one real big influence. I just have influences all over. I mean, everything is constantly changing the way I think about design or how to make something.
Yeah, you mentioned installing versus furniture building.
Yeah.
And in installing or cabinetry, it's just boxes. You incorporate so much curved work and curvature in your work. And I kind of know, could you explain why?
You know, it started out as a challenge.
Back when I was hoping.
You know, it's always like, if you ask someone, oh, can you build this? Like, yeah, sure. And, oh, can you make it round? Well, it's going to be three times as much now. You know, like everything round or curved is just way more complicated. That's when you don't have those reference points of a square line, things get complicated tricky quick. You really have to think ahead. So that was the original thing. It's just I wanted to push my skills. And mm-hmm. Now I love the look. I mean, everything I'm doing has that fits for me. Just it adds a whole new dimension, element that you don't see in a lot of woodworking. I think because it's more challenging, but that just makes it like so much more interesting to me.
Same. Yeah. It just catches your eyes. And I was taught early on with design. Mark Adams taught me this. The curve allows your eye to follow the line.
Right. Yeah.
To see it moves you through the piece.
Yep.
And he actually said it, curvature is the, I don't know if it was Mark that taught me that, but somebody said curvature and work is like a true sign of a true craftsman. Oh. Have you ever done any work on a yacht?
No, I've never done any boat stuff. So okay, I grew up in Colorado, which is pretty landlocked.
Wow.
So there's no boats around us. And I've always wanted to do like a canoe, but the space on something like that is just insane. You know, I mean, just making the strips, the table saw, you need like 30 feet or something.
Yeah.
So I've never had enough to make a canoe, but one day.
It's funny because the best cabinet makers, and then I said, a cabinet maker's a cabinet maker. No, the best cabinet makers I know or have worked with worked on mega yachts because once again, nothing is square on a yacht. It's all compound acts as you follow it. It is so difficult to build and fit or install on a yacht.
I always heard that.
I don't think a lot of people know that. So somebody says, boy, they charged a lot for that little built-in on the yacht. I go, yeah, because it you reminded me when you said, yeah, it's like three times as much now because it's got a curve in it, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so there was an intriguing build that I saw maybe a year or two ago. What you did, it's just funny. Everybody's got to go see that. Go to Russell's. Please go to Russell's Instagram account. You did a periodic table of contents?
Yeah. Yeah, so that was a commission piece, and the client had Lucite cubes, and each cube had a sample of an element from the periodic table. And he didn't have any way to display all this. So he said, you know, can you come up with something cool? And I did like the full thing, like you're saying, like it's a full periodic table with all the little squares, like an individual spot for each one. The whole thing has LEDs under it, so it lights up the cubes. I mean, it was cool. It was probably one of the most annoying builds I've ever done because you have to do everything so many times. Oh, I mean, like, repetitive was just insane, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, got really cool.
How many elements are there?
118.
See, I knew you would know.
And everyone kept saying, well, what happens when they add a new one? I'm like, hopefully I build another one then.
Yeah, you know? Like, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure. So are a lot of your clients, how do they reach out to you?
You know, it's all been word of mouth so far. I have been lucky enough that I haven't had to chase people down and really have just had my work speak for itself and spread around that way. Instagram's helped a lot now just with like my local community. I've got a couple of local designers who have decided that they want to have my work involved with their designs. So that's been great. And then, you know, just friends and friends of friends, and people see something at my house, they're like, oh, I like that. Can you make something like that for me? And it just spreads that way. So I've been lucky that I haven't had to chase business.
Yeah. Yeah, and the best part is I hated chasing money, but I didn't have a lot of that because most of mine was word of mouth. Hey, do you have a lot of people that have found you, used you, and then come back for more?
Yeah. I mean, I don't think I've had anyone that hasn't come back for a second project. Everyone is always, like, into whatever I made. And I really try to push for perfection on everything to the point where it's like, you know, I'm mad because I got one little splinter of Terra on the back of it and I can't, you know, like let something like that go out the door, so I'll fix it, you know, those types of things. And then I've also always tried to be so honest with my clients. Like, I've had plenty of clients like, hey, can you build this? I'm like, I could, and I could take your money, but just go buy that. Or, you know, like, I'm not trying to take people for a ride, and that seems to really help.
Oh my god. Have you ever had a client that wanted to come back for more and you said no?
Yeah.
Me too. Me too.
I think that's, it's just going to happen. You're going to have clients you deal work well with, and or that, you know, like, you've done everything right and you've done it beyond what was expected and you gave them a fair price and they're still asking for more for free, and you can't keep working for customers like that. Then the other side of it is I've realize too that if someone is so tight on budget that custom woodworking is not for them, you know, if it's like, oh, well, you know, and like, I heard you could get that table for $100 here. I'm like, well, then go get that one. Like, you're in this because you're buying art. You're not in this because you're trying to get a degree.
Right. Hey, yeah, isn't that the truth? I've actually, Mikey, my business partner, used to hate it when I say, hey, do I look hungry? And they go, what do you mean? I go, you should go to IKEA, right?
Yeah,
because
sure.
I wasn't a bargain builder. That's right. What Mikey used to say, my business partner. All right, so let's talk a little bit about power tools and hand tools, because I know what you're sitting in front of.
Yeah, my tool cabinet.
Oh, my God, I was blown away when you pulled that up. Because I'm kind of going, okay, he's got that.
Right?
I'm a hand tool fanatic. So I know what I say to people because I'm in the power tool business, but I love hand tools. You use both like I do. What's the mix? I mean, where does it start? Where does it stop?
I would
what's
say
the mix that you-
everything gets touched with the hand tool by the end.
Yeah.
You know, I do 95% of the bulk work with power tools. I mean, I don't do any hand milling unless the board is just like, you know, 20 inches wide, not a joiner that wide. Like, it's otherwise everything goes through the joiner and planer. Table saw does all my big cuts. I do hand cut some joinery, mainly dovetails. I'll hand cut a mortise and pattern sometimes. But most of it is just that refining the fit and finish of everything is done with hand tools. Or just when a power tool just won't work. I mean, as you get into more complicated work, you start to realize that wow, there's just no power tool that can accomplish this. You have to get out the hands on.
Correct. I always told everybody, and I'll bring it back. I'm just starting with Festool. I tell everybody Festool is the best power tool, handheld power tool, but you also have your machinery that you need in a shop. And yep. I use hand planes, hand saws, whatever, for my final fit and finish.
And exactly.
It's exactly what you just said. It's your final fit and finish. But I get to that point with a high-quality bandsaw or a high-quality table saw, and then all my power tools and sanders are all Festool, of course, at my home shop, for right. sure.
Yeah.
Cool. I always thought
that the hand tools are like, that get you that like at 5% and also make it like, you know, they say like a framer might worry about an eighth of an inch, a trim carpenter might worry about a 32nd, whereas when you become a hand tool woodworker, you can worry about 1,000th because you're taking a hand plane and fitting that joint to 1,000th. You know, you might have cut it to a 32nd, but now you can just like make it perfect, you know, where it's not like, oh, that's good enough, or there's a little bit of a gap like that. It gives you the control to get it perfect.
Hey, what's your favorite hand tool?
Probably a card scraper. And
yes.
It's so cheap.
Yes.
Like, yes! Everyone should get one. You can learn how to sharpen and how metal sharpens.
Yeah.
Because you have to square it. Like, yep, yeah. And then you learn about turning a burr, which is actually, you know, the burr is normally the enemy on sharpening, but on that, it becomes your cutting
yep.
edge. And they work for all kinds of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And you can't mess them up. Once you can pull the burr, you can go across the grain, do anything. You're not going to mess up your piece. And they get into some really cool places.
I just was cruising through this morning. It came to my feet at home about a card scraper. And I think it was Whit Woodworks. And his thumbnail said, I think I'm embarrassed. And then it said, I have trouble getting the burr or sharpening a card scraper. And yep. that just drew me in. I just put it for a watch later. I'm going to watch it tonight because I totally agree, and it's one of my favorite yep. Hand tools. I even scrape finish with it
yep.
if I have a good burr on there
because yep.
I can denib stuff, and it just takes seconds, and you know, and I get a perfect finish on it. So, yeah. Oh, that's a good answer. That's a really good answer. I made a scraper out of a hunk of bandsaw blade. It's hard and steel.
Yep.
So I didn't ever throw away bandsaw blades. I can make scrapers, or more important, Garrett Hack showed me how to make scratch stocks.
Yeah.
With bandsaw,
which is really
bandsaw
just
blades.
A scraper.
It's yeah. all it is.
Yeah. So we haven't talked about it, but I did that secretary desk.
Yes.
And that I had to do a lot of scratch stock stuff because they don't make router bits or things that the shapes that you need. So I have a bunch of card scrapers, and I took one, and I started cutting it up and making the different shapes, you know, and just get a file and a hacksaw, and you can make any shape you want and match it perfectly to another piece.
Any shape. That's secretary. I have a note here on my my questions. That's secretary. By the way, that was a beautifully carved shell on there.
Oh,
that
nice.
Was beautiful.
So I did the interior shells on that, and then my buddy David Buff, who's a period furniture maker, he's got a YouTube channel and Instagram. He makes amazing stuff. He did the convex shells, and I did the concave shells.
Yeah.
So we kind of like tag teamed the carving on that one.
Okay, as you're talking, what is his name?
David Boeuf, B-O-E-F.
Thank you. I'm going to look him up.
Definitely.
I'm trying to get Freddie Roman on here for Shop Talk. He is
nice.
One of the nicest gentlemen you ever want to meet. Oh, what a good guy. What a great personality. That is really cool. So, hey, we're at Festool. I got to ask some Festool questions here.
Yeah.
I was cruising your feed, and you have quite a few Festools.
A little collection.
Yeah, you have quite a few.
Yeah.
I always got to remind myself. I'm looking at Chris. I always got to remind myself, hey, we got to ask some Festool questions, Sedge. Let me ask. How did you hear about Festool? When did you start using it?
You know, I think I heard about it from the Wood Whisperer when he started, like, first coming on the scene.
Way
and,
cool.
You know, he's obviously the big Festool pusher at the time, and not a lot of people had that. I didn't see it anywhere else, really. I might have seen it in magazines, but I didn't really understand.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's how I initially heard about it.
Way cool.
Yeah.
Way cool. It's like, I remember when Mark started using it, and then all of a sudden, quite a few people started using it. I mean, I've been around the brand and using it for 20-something years. Yeah. And I'm just like, man, nobody knew what it was. And now it seems like quite a few people know what it is, but a lot of people still don't understand it. Hey, that's why I have a job, right?
Right, yeah, for sure. I mean, it's not just like buying that power tool, you know, it's that whole buying into a system that idea that everything works together really well. But to me, it was about getting something that is just really accurate all the time. Because a lot of my old power tools were never very accurate. And I started like I said, I was really young. So I'd buy like Harbor Freight garbage and beat it up. And when it finally died, I'd like step up to like a DeWalt and, you know, yep. use that for a while. And now when that dies, I'll step up to the Festool.
Yep.
And that difference from coming from like something from Harbor Freight to Festool is astounding. I mean, you really do get what you pay for with those tools. They're expensive, but they are worth it 100%.
Somebody asked me one time, and this kind of blew me away. Way because I had to think about it, Russell. They said, hey, what was your first jigsaw? And I said, oh, I know. And it's what I could afford, right?
Yeah.
And I started with, I'll name the brands. I started with a Craftsman, and then I owned a Porta Cable, and then I owned a Bosch. And I said, and I bought my first Festool jigsaw, the Tryon, down at a marine store in Fort Lauderdale. And I said, I was buying it on a 30-day guarantee satisfaction. I was going to return it. But the cut I got off of there, I was blown away. I was cutting 2-inch thick teak, and that stuff is just so wonky.
Oh yeah,
and it dulls everything. And I made a perfect, I think, ack about this big, and that teak, because it was a piece I was building for a little bench on for a yacht, and I was blown away. I said, and I was also pissed because I went back to Eddie at Marine Industry. I said, what else are these guys?
Yeah. Right.
And I was hooked. Hooked.
It's good stuff.
Oh, for sure. Hey, let me see. What is another question? Do you know how many you own? Festool?
Let me look over there. 4 or 5?
Way cool. What's your favorite one?
The ETS sander.
Nope. Okay.
And that was actually the first Festool I got, and I got it used. That a guy was like done with woodworking, and I, you know, went and picked through his tools. I'm like, oh, I'll take the Festool, try that out. And at the time, you know, I was using like a rigid random orbital that was like a 5-inch random orbital that buzzed like crazy. It was loud. Your hands like tingled after you used it. It was just dust collection's terrible. I got that thing, and I was like, you have got to be kidding. Like, the finish on it is 10 times better. My hands never feel tingly. There's no vibration. It's super quiet. The dust collection's like, I mean, if you run a vac with it or the extractor, you cannot see dust. It's perfect. So that's, and you spend so much time sanding on every project.
Right.
I held that tool probably more than any other power tool in the shop. So, and it's made my life so much better. So that's definitely my favorite.
Okay, so if I'm to ask this question, if I could get rid of all Festool, what was the one you would want to use all the time? If you could only have one.
Just one? It might be the sander, but, man, the domino is hard just for to give up just because of the money-making ability of it. You know, I mean,
I know.
You can put stuff together so fast with that thing. It makes pocket holes look so slow. I mean, it's crazy.
I'm just blown away. I always would tell people with the domino, it shouldn't be this easy, you know?
Yeah,
It makes mortise and tenon joinery, or loose tenon joinery, possible for a person just beginning. And it's a real woodworking joint because you got the long grain to long grain adhesion.
Yeah.
That is so cool. Okay, so you've been doing this for a while. We had this wonderful thing. I like asking this question because a lot of people had to pivot. During 2020, when we were going into lockdown and the pandemic, and then 2021 and 2022, did you have to change anything in your business model? Did you have to pivot somehow? Did you lose business?
No, I'd say pretty lucky with that. Actually, that's right around the time that I got that secretary bill too.
Yeah.
I did a clock with that as well.
And
that,
Yeah.
So, but that was like, I think I worked on both of those for like 7 or 8 months. So that was a huge... huge amount of work right there. So I wasn't like, I was lucky that I didn't have to pivot because I had something that just kept me busy for so long.
Wow.
We had a lot of like people that are staying at home all of a sudden, and they're like, oh, we wanted to, you know, redo our room and we need a new table for this or whatever. So I got a couple of those types of gigs too, where they may not have asked for it before, but because of the pandemic they did. So.
And the nice thing, because I know this, you're full time. This is your full time gig, right?
Pretty much. I started doing it like as a part time gig because I mm-hmm. decided to stay home when we had our second kid. So I was staying home with the two kids and doing cool. this during like nap times. And I was always being a woodworker before that, but I started selling stuff at that point, doing it for a living. And now they're in school. So when they get on the bus, I come out to the workshop and start working on stuff, and then they get off the bus and I'm back with the kids. So summertime, you'll notice on my Instagram, everything kind of takes a dive. I'm not very busy because I'm with the kids all summer, you know? I mean, I'll still get some stuff, but I really try to keep work away at that point so that I can spend time with them.
You get your priorities straight, Russell, that's for sure. That's for sure. Hey, somebody getting started in woodworking, do you have any advice for them?
Just getting started, if you're doing it for a hobby, like just completely go out there and like have fun. Like
good.
Really, I wouldn't even care about what the things look like. Like just go build some shelves for your basement or something or your garage, yeah. You know, like because when you see what you've created, you're like, oh, this is cool. And don't look at like, oh, I saw so-and-so on Instagram building this and it's amazing and I could never build that. Like, of course not. You don't have the experience or the tooling that they have. Just start building like stupid stuff like that, and you will naturally progress and get better if you build on it.
Oh, good. Because there's a lot of people who are listening to this. I guarantee it. They're at work right now. They got their ear pods in. And they may be doing this part-time. It's their hobby. And hopefully yep. they're listening, because that jump, you got to follow that passion for sure. That's what I always try to get across to people. It's a lot of work, but I think it's worth it. If you have that passion, it'll show, I believe. Yep.
Your skills and everything will just naturally grow. You'll just get better and better. But you have to love it. Otherwise, it's not the right thing to do for a job.
Yeah, that's. I think some people jump too quick into it,
yep.
and they don't realize how much work it is. They thought, they thought it was going to be easy because I just did this part-time at night.
Right.
And then they finally make the jump, and they go, oh, boy, this is a lot of work. And I always tell people to make sure you have the right business acumen behind you, because it is a business, and you've got to make some money at it for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, is there a question that I should have asked you?
No, I feel like we covered it all.
I think we did, man. That was awesome. Yeah. Oh, my God. Okay. I got my point across. I want to make sure everybody follows you, Russell, because you are an amazing craftsman. Blown away every time. You're turning a lot, huh? It seems like you just turned that popcorn bowl.
Yeah. I turned a few bowls, a couple of walnut bowls just recently, and that's – it seems to be right around Christmas time. I always turn on the lathe to make a couple of quick projects for people, you know. I cut down some trees for a neighbor, and one of them was a big chunk of walnut. I'm like, well, I'll take a few of those logs. So, yeah, took my hand at it again. I'm not a master turner by any means. I can do enough like make furniture and get by, but it is fun to do because it's like it is not standard woodworking. You're in a whole different world over there. I mean, I'm still working with wood, but it's different. It's totally different.
I'm still trying to get Festool to come out with a really kicking lathe, but I don't think that would fit the sustainer. That'd be kind of cool. Yeah. Okay. I could talk all day. I know you're busy. I want to thank you so much. Everybody go and check out Russell at Kieselbach Workshop on Instagram. Do you have any other places they can reach you? Like, nope.
That's it.
That's perfect.
Yeah, like I said, I'm not like chasing business. So no? I started Instagram just to like keep a catalog of my projects, and then that kind of took off. I'm like, oh, people want to see what I'm building? Like, okay.
Yeah. It's amazing. You've kept it simple. You can concentrate on what you're doing. You're so focused, and you get your priorities straight, my friend. Okay, I want to thank you. Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, man. Anytime, reach out to us, please, for anything, Russell.
And
everybody, go follow Russell on Kieselbach Workshop. This is the end of Festool Shop Talk 24.
Great.
Thanks, Russell.
Hey, thanks, Mike. Have a good day.
You too.